What are you taking responsibility for?
You know, it happened on my watch, and I'm not proud of that. I'll never be proud of it. I didn't like it. I mean, the commissioner's office made it very, very clear. The GM and the manager were in position to make sure that nothing like this happened, and we fell short.
That was former Astros manager A.J. Hinch on MLB Network, giving his first public comments since he was fired for his role in the sign-stealing scandal. As pitchers and catchers report this week, Houston's shenanigans are still the talk of the league. But so is a new playoff format, a terrifying Dodgers roster, and a Boston fan base that may have to root for a guy named Jeter. Today, as spring training begins, we break down the storylines that will define the upcoming MLB season. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Wednesday, February 12th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Jeff, hello.
Let's break some codes, Mina Kimes.
Jeff Passan is an MLB insider for ESPN. He's in West Palm Beach at the Astros spring training facility.
I keep thinking we're done talking about the Astros, and then this story keeps roaring right on back. So the latest is we have A.J. Hinch, the former manager, making his first public statement. Then Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal published a story with evidence that the Houston front office laid the groundwork for some cheating with a system called Codebreaker. Can you bring us up to date on this?
Major League Baseball would love it if this story went away. And the Houston Astros would love it if this story went away. And yet, this is the onion with seemingly endless layers. We'll start with the Codebreaker story. And the fact that we're talking about a baseball team and they have a system in place called Codebreaker, and that one of their front office officials was referring to it in emails as their dark arts that helped win them a championship, shows you just how deep the nefariousness of the Astros went. The way it worked was they would have people input signs and sign sequences into an Excel spreadsheet, and that Excel spreadsheet would use an algorithm to spit out what the pitches were going to be.
There's a lot to unpack here, but I'll start here. I keep hearing that these are the smartest guys in baseball, that the Astros in particular, right, are geniuses. And yet they called their scheme Codebreaker and put it in an email, Jeff.
I don't even know what to say other than, you know, in one of the early episodes of ESPN Daily, we talked about the Astros. And in that episode, I remember pretty distinctly using a word, hubris. When we look back on this Astros team 5, 10, 20 years from now, I think hubris is ultimately going to be the defining characteristic of this team.
The other thing that sort of moves the story forward insofar as when the initial punishment came down, Jeff, and Rob Manfred's statement came out, he seemed to put most of the blame, if not all of it, really on the players. Now we're hearing the front office, they were up to their own misdeeds. Is that going to expand the punishment?
No. And that's the curious part of this, right? The notion that the front office, most of which is still there, is totally clean in this, it just doesn't hold a lot of water, which is why the report that came out in the Wall Street Journal was so damning, because it named names. It referred to a 5-page letter that Rob Manfred had sent to Jeff Luhnow that laid out his case for Luhnow being involved in this. Now, Luhnow still denies all of this. He said, I would get these emails, but I would just read the first page. If you are essentially the CEO of baseball operations in an organization, is it not your duty to read through emails that people on your team are sending you, particularly ones that might include references to these dark arts, to these championship winning endeavors that you, as the CEO, either greenlit or were too incompetent to know were going on?
I would like to not be on the record for judging someone for not reading a very long email right now.
You don't finish emails?
No, I always read every long email.
Of course
I
you
get
do.
From my colleagues.
Because you are the CEO of ESPN Daily, and you know it would be wrong to do otherwise when you guys are figuring out the dark arts of podcasting.
Hopefully no code breaking's going on over here. So at the same time as this Wall Street Journal story comes out, AJ Hinch is being interviewed. And he was directly asked, Jeff, about whether players had buzzers under their jerseys to alert them to whether pitches were coming.
Can you assure us there were no buzzers or anything like that being used?
Well, the commissioner, we got investigated for 3 months, and the commissioner's office did as thorough an investigation as anyone could imagine was possible. I mean, I know he mentioned the emails and the texts and the messages, and I believe them.
What did you make of his comments?
All you had to do was just say no. And the fact that he didn't come out and say no, I think said a lot and is only fueling the fire here. I have been hearing for upward of 2 years now about what one source called a pitch picking algorithm. And that's exactly what Codebreaker was. And so these little snippets that I've been hearing whispers about, that I try to track down and confirm, every single one of them, I mean, every single one of them has become true. The only one at this point that has not been confirmed as being real is the buzzers. And Major League Baseball said it looked into it, and it said it asked players during interviews about the buzzers. Now, we have like a prisoner dilemma situation here, right? Let's say 15 players were interviewed about this with immunity if they tell the truth, but punishment if they don't. Are all 15 going to hold firm and hold strong, knowing that even one of them breaks, the other 14 are facing significant suspensions potentially? That's the problem with the buzzer story for me. It's that you would need to perpetuate the most immense and enormous lie you could possibly dream of for a baseball team. And you better trust your teammates, and in some cases, ex-teammates, absolutely implicitly to keep that lie going. Logic there tells me, no, there were no buzzers. They all wouldn't lie about it like that. And yet I look back at the history of this, and of all the things I've heard and of all the things that have been proven true, and it just makes me wonder, what is the truth in this situation?
Houston brought in Dusty Baker to manage a team, but also maybe repair their reputation a little bit. I mean, what message was the organization sending by hiring him?
That we're going to bring in somebody who's stable, that we're going to bring in somebody who can be a good spokesman for us, that we're going to bring in somebody who's going to help take steps to repair this organization that has been broken by this scandal.
You know, this is a new beginning. It's a new beginning for us, a new beginning for me. And I think that the thing that we have going for us is the amount of love that the players have for the city and the city has for the players and the players have for each other.
And yet I think it's a little foolish to think that somebody who wasn't there throughout this is going to suddenly become the spokesman for what happened during that time. The Astros are trying to get past it, but there are still questions that have not been answered. It's something as simple as, do the players actually feel bad about this? Ex-Astros have said they do. Dallas Keuchel came out and apologized. Charlie Morton came out and apologized. And yet here we are with pitchers and catchers reporting. And not a single current Houston Astro has apologized for a scandal that has been out there for 3 months, going back to the original Athletic story in which Mike Fiers blew this whole thing wide open.
Well, in the midst of all this drama, the Astros are still very good at baseball, and they're among the favorites to go to the World Series in 2020. How do you think they stack up against the other teams in the American League, like the Yankees?
I think the Astros right now are the favorite in the American League West. The Oakland A's are going to be nipping at their heels. The Angels spent $245 million on Anthony Rendon and get Shohei Ohtani back full-time this year. And so they're improving. And the Texas Rangers have gotten better, too. But the Astros are the team to beat in the West. The question for them is going to be pitching. They lost Garrett Cole to the Yankees, and that is a huge, huge swing of wins in the Yankees' direction. And the Yankees now get to put Cole out there in game one of the American League Championship Series against the Astros, if it comes down to that, to face off with Justin Verlander. They're still potentially a 100-win team, trash can or not.
You didn't even mention the Mariners when you went through the AL West. The disrespect.
I did mention the other four teams in the division, didn't I?
This disrespect will not stand, Jeff. Coming up, it's not just the Astros making news as spring training gets underway. We're going to talk about some of the other stories dominating the major league headlines as pitchers and catchers report.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So, Jeff, the other spicy baseball news is the reports that Major League Baseball is considering changes to the postseason, increasing the number of teams from 10 to 14 and letting some of those teams pick who they're playing. Can you explain to me what's going on?
So here's the way it would work. You would have 7 playoff teams in each league. There would be 3 division winners and 4 wild cards. And it would be a tiered system similar to the NFL, actually. The number 1 overall seed would be the team with the best record in each league. It would get a bye into the division series. The 6 remaining teams would go into the wild card round, a 3-game format. And here's how that would work. The number 2 seed would get to choose its opponent among the 3 lowest seeded teams, which would be the 3 wild card teams with the worst record. Then the number 3 seed, the 3rd division winner, would get to choose its opponent as well. And the number 4 seed, which would be the best wild card team, would play whoever is remaining among those 3.
So why are they doing this?
You know, they're doing this for a couple of reasons. Money. And money always talks. And if you have potentially 16 more playoff games, you're going to have probably a pretty frenzied bidding among television networks. But beyond that, the idea is to make September more interesting. Now, the blowback here has been pretty swift. And I think part of that is that fans are reticent to change and they don't like gimmicky ideas and the notion of a selection show where teams are going to choose their opponent on TV maybe feels trite or wrong in some way. But the big question for me is, what will this do for the number 1 seed? In Major League Baseball, there is this prevalent idea that the longer you sit out during the postseason, the rustier you are. And you are taking, in this scenario, the number 1 seed and forcing it to sit out for 5 days. And so whatever advantage it may have by getting to rest its pitchers or set up its rotation while others are playing games could ultimately be mitigated by the fact that it's been sitting out as long as it has.
Jeff, One team that's going to have a challenging time getting that bye is the Boston Red Sox, who just hired a new interim manager, Ron Renicki. Now, as everyone knows by now, Boston traded their former MVP, Mookie Betts, to the Dodgers. The deal was briefly upheld, giving fleeting and perhaps delusional hope to depressed Red Sox fans everywhere, but it was ultimately finalized. Let me ask you, why'd they do it?
They wanted to get underneath the luxury tax threshold, and the easiest route to do that was by packaging Mookie Betts together with David Price. And the Los Angeles Dodgers are a financial behemoth who themselves had dipped under the tax threshold last year. And accordingly, they have money to spend right now, and they want to win a World Series. Let's remember, the last time the Dodgers won a World Series is when Kirk Gibson was limping around the bases in 1988. So it's been a long time coming. And to go out and get Mookie Betts is a move by the Dodgers that says, we want to win now. They're pushing their chips into the middle of the table right now and giving up future value in Alex Verdugo and in Jeter Downs.
I'm sorry, the Red Sox acquired a player named Jeter?
That they did. How great is it going to be, by the way, when Jeter Downs is starting at second base, like heir apparent to Dustin Pedroia, and he goes to Fenway, and there's just this constant cognitive dissonance of cheering a guy at Fenway Park named Jeter.
So now that the Dodgers have Mookie, how good are they?
Their floor is 100 wins. Things can go wrong for the Dodgers this year. You can have injuries. You can have regression. I still think they win 100 games. Ultimately, this is about talent. And the Dodgers have more talent than anybody in the National League, certainly. And you can make an argument more talent than anyone in baseball. We're looking at a potentially historically good team.
How many prayer candles is Rob Manfred lighting every night, hoping that we get a Dodgers-Yankees World Series and not a Dodgers-Astros World Series?
I mean, Rob Manfred has a lot to deal with this year, right? The fallout of the Astros sign-stealing scandal, questions about the baseball, a collective bargaining agreement, trying to cut 25% of the minor leagues, issues about baseball's demographics and its ability to make stars. I mean, Rob Manfred's job in 2020 is, I would argue, the most difficult of any commissioner in professional sports. So if he could get a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, he would cartwheel from Dodger Stadium to Yankee Stadium the entire way with the biggest smile on his face, because he would feel like his sport finally has won.
Well, Jeff, let's end on a positive note, because this is a positive time of year for baseball fans, right? It's all hope and optimism, or if you're a Seattle Mariners fan like me, delusion. Who is a dark horse team that you are excited about this season?
The clear answer to this is the Chicago White Sox. And it's interesting because the White Sox for years have been talking about their rebuild, and there was a pretty good one on the north side of the city that gave them their first World Series in more than 100 years. And yet the White Sox has been much more slow going. You know, the prospects have been a little slower to develop, and they haven't spent any money. Well, finally this offseason, they actually spent some money. $72 million on Yasmani Grandal, who's one of the best catchers in baseball. $50 million plus on Dallas Keuchel to help fill out a rotation that has a lot of young arms with great potential. You look at the White Sox right now, and there's a five-year window where you think they can compete. And considering they're in an American League Central, where Cleveland is either going to need to trade Francisco Lindor or going to lose him to free agency in 2021, and a Minnesota Twins team that, while built really well in the short term, may not have the same long-term prospects as the White Sox, the future looks really good for them right now.
Thanks so much, Jeff. Try to avoid the dark arts while you're out there.
I will do my best, Mina. Thanks.
Coming up, UConn isn't UConn anymore, but they might get back to their old ways soon.
Whatever you want to protect, nobody has more ways to help keep you safe than ADT, the most trusted name in security. You can customize an ADT security package to help protect your home in a way that works for you and your budget. ADT has HD video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart lights, smart locks, smart thermostats, flood sensors, fire and carbon monoxide detectors, all connected to 24/7 monitoring and controlled by the sound of your voice or the ADT app. So help protect your home today with ADT. Learn more at ADT.com/podcast. Here's another story I want you to know. A few weeks ago, we talked about the unparalleled success of the UConn women's basketball team and how their grip on the sport has finally loosened. At the time, we included a bunch of caveats about how UConn's still very good and basketball fans shouldn't freak out and overreact. But since then, the Huskies have gone on to lose a couple times, falling by 18 points to Oregon in early February, and then on Monday, getting beat down by South Carolina.
And South Carolina, after 8 tries and 8 denies, have finally beaten UConn, 70-52 the final.
So, it might be time to freak out a little, but hope might be around the corner. Because the number one prospect in the country, a high school senior from Minnesota named Paige Beckers, is headed to UConn. And according to a terrific profile by our Katie Barnes, she has program-changing abilities. Here's how good Beckers is. She's USA Basketball's 2019 Female Athlete of the Year and has won gold for the country's under-19 and under-17 FIBA World Cup teams. She's a two-time winner of the Gatorade Girls Basketball Player of the Year Award in Minnesota, where she's averaging more than 21 points and 9 assists per game with her high school team. She's also a McDonald's All-American, and perhaps most notably, UConn coach Gino Auriemma told Barnes that Beckers reminds him of Diana Taurasi, saying, "She's as good as anybody I've ever seen with the ball in her hands. She has something that's rare." Now, that's notable not only because, oh my God, can you imagine Gino Auriemma saying that about you, but also because, as Barnes points out in their piece, 9 of UConn's 11 trophies were won with Taurasi, Maya Moore, or Brianna Stewart. As Gino said, "When we lost the last 3, someone said, well, you know, the only time those guys win the national championship is when they have the best player. No bleep." Well, assuming Becker's promise pans out, soon enough, they will have the undisputed best player. And she's bringing reinforcements. According to Barnes, Beckers has been recruiting one of her biggest competitors, the top-ranked junior in the country, AZ Fudd, who also happens to be one of her closest friends. Now, Fudd could end up somewhere else, perhaps igniting a new rivalry, but if she ends up at UConn, the dynasty could be back. And so will the concern trolling, along with that age-old question, is UConn too dominant? I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.